From WXXI News, I'm Frank Sigelski, and this is Connections Arts Friday. Well, for this hour on Connections Arts Friday, we're going to talk about a number of things, and we're going to mix and match. And talking about mixing and matching, maybe you've heard about pairings of wine and food. Well, for the first part of the show, we're going to talk about pairings of music and wine. We have Lisa Hallgren, co-owner of Ravine's Wine Cellars, and she's on the phone along with Richard Alden Clark, who is a musician. He's with the Manhattan Chamber Orchestra, and he's on the line as well. They'll be playing at that wine cellar, but let's get the guests on here now. Let's see. We have Lisa.
Hi, Frank.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so you're co-owner of Ravine's Wine Cellars, and so you have the wine piece, but then also the music piece, and you're welcoming the Manhattan Chamber Orchestra to your winery this weekend? When is it?
Yes, Saturday at 7:30.
Okay, and that would be, you'd have Richard Alden Clark. He's on the other line, I believe. Richard? Richard,
how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. Thanks for coming on board and looking forward to the concert this weekend. Tell us a little bit about, and either of you can answer this question, the pairings of wine and music as opposed to wine and food. And is that a huge trend nationwide, internationally? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, if you don't mind, I can start with that because we've been doing it for the last 12 years since we opened Ravine's. We make wines that are dry, very food-friendly, really nice and complex in the European style. And so we've always gone out of our way to create a better experience for people by pairing them with not only food, but with the music, appropriate music. Like, for instance, when we release a new wine, like, say, our dry rosé, it's very Provençal in style. So we'll make Provençal food. And then one of my friends, I have a lot of musicians who are friends, who are friends of mine, who will come and play like modern French composers. And so we kind of create an experience that's greater than the sum of its parts.
Okay. And has this been noticed before, or are you the first person? Or how long have people sort of recognized the connection between the music and the food?
Sometimes it's not really so much that they notice it and they talk about it. It's just, it's all, it's overall feeling. It creates a theme, and it creates a more of a sensual experience with the food, with the wine, and the music all together.
Okay, and then just one more question on the event Saturday night, the concert. What type of venue would the musicians expect to find, and the audience members that they come?
I think Richard might answer that.
Okay, the venue.
Yes.
I mean, you're not...
Well, we have enjoyed playing in the different wineries, and this is our first time being at Ravine. And I think the idea of doing classical music concerts, not in the typical kind of space, not in a concert hall, but in a more intimate setting, in something that's a little bit different. And, you know, like fine wine, classical music needs that time to age and to kind of build an appreciation for it. So you're going to be in an intimate, close-up setting, very friendly, and basically the musicians are right in your face, and it's going to be a charming, wonderful experience, the way chamber music was meant to be heard. It wasn't written to be played in a big concert hall. It was meant to be played in somebody's living room or a salon or a parlor with a more closely associated audience.
Okay. You did a performance here this past June on Backstage Pass. You were up here, the Manhattan Chamber Orchestra. Yes, you did. And we have some of that recorded music. I don't know if we're going to get a chance to jump into that, play that in a little bit. And that's going to be what we're going to play is, I think, something similar to what you're going to be playing Saturday night. So, Johnny, can you cue that up in a minute here? Yep. Okay. All right. Let me know when it's ready. And, now let me ask Lisa, when you started having musicians at the winery, did you have to consider the acoustics? Did you have to do any remodeling, or does sound travel well in a barn?
Well, over at Cuca Lake, our Cuca Lake tasting room is not a barn. It is, in fact, all tiled floors, and so it's kind of a closed space. We didn't need any amplifiers, let me put it that way. But over in our barn, we have a beautiful old barn in Geneva, and that's where the Manhattan Chamber Orchestra played last fall. And the acoustics there are beautiful, and you can really get a really nice, rich sound there also. So we're lucky enough to have two different places for them to play.
Okay, all right. And weather wouldn't be a problem, rain or shine. Folks can come on down, and it's the exact address of the venue tomorrow or Saturday, yeah.
It's 14630 State Route 54. It's right on Keuka Lake, overlooking Keuka Lake. In fact, there's a beautiful view of the lake from the tasting room, and it's right between Hammondsport and Penyan on Keuka Lake.
All right, beautiful setting there. Richard Alden Clark, how do you choose music to play in a setting like this as opposed to playing in a more traditional venue?
Well, for the chamber music, this is a grand finale event, so we're using a string sextet. Two violins, two violas, and two cellos. And I picked a piece by the Russian composer Tchaikovsky, but it's the Souvenir de Florence, about his experiences going around the countryside of Italy. And, of course, the Italian great wines. What a better place to play this piece than in a winery. And the acoustics at Ravines is so wonderful. It's going to be such a vibrant, rich sound that strings, you know, if you had brass instruments, it might be a little too overwhelming up close. But with strings, it has the power and the passion and the beauty, but also the resonance in a space like that, so people will really feel engulfed but not overwhelmed by the music.
Okay, fantastic. That's Richard Alden Clark, a member of the Manhattan Chamber Orchestra. They'll be playing tomorrow night at the winery. Richard, we're going to let you go here, but we're going to play that piece of music. So we look forward to seeing you tomorrow, and travel safely. Lisa will stay on the line, but let's hear that piece of music that you performed at Backstage Pass June 2014. Let's have that now. That's beautiful. Francesco Molina is the composer. That is performed by members of the Manhattan Chamber Orchestra at Backstage Pass in June of 2014, and they'll be playing Saturday at Ravines Wine Cellar. And we have Lisa Hallgren. She's co-owner of Ravines Wine Cellars. You still there, Lisa?
Yes. This is Kelly Bradley, the executive director of the Smith Opera House. How about that?
Okay, well, that's a nice switcheroo, but I hope we have you both. Kelly, welcome to Connections Arts Friday, and I'm a graduate of Hobart and William Smith College. I know the venue well, and it's it's a beautiful masterpiece in the middle of the Finger Lakes. So, so tell us about your involvement in music, wine, and the wine cellar, and, you know, things that you're doing as part of this.
Well, I think that the Smith Opera House is part of a larger organization, which is the Smith Center for the Arts. And our mission is to promote arts in not only our building, the Smith Opera House, but in area venues. And this is where our collaboration has worked out really well, taking the riches of the land, so to speak, which is a lot of talent. As you know, musical talent is from this area, and then mixing it with the wineries. And we have promoted several artists in local wineries in the area.
Oh, fantastic. Now, I heard a rumor that you have air conditioning now at the Smith Opera House.
Yes, it's true. We got it running last year, and now we have our We're Cool. It's our first ever programmed summer with a lot of exciting people coming up. Roseanne Cash is coming up August 21st.
Oh, wow, fantastic. And do you plan on expanding your work schedule with more wineries, or is this something that you see heading in a positive direction for everyone and in terms of outreach as well?
Yes, I do. I think that by collaborating, it's only a win-win for everybody. So I see us already expanding. We're already adding new wineries and new sites every year.
Yeah, okay.
For the future, yeah.
Okay. Lisa, how many concerts have you had at Ravines? You've had many before. You had one last year, obviously, at least, but you've been doing this regularly?
We do. Not as big as the Manhattan Chamber Orchestra or the one that we had with the Smith Opera House. But we have small ones all the time. We invite people to come and play. And even just in a small little setting with one or two musicians playing for us in our private clubs that we have there. We have a big wine club where we have a lot of music playing for the wine club events. So we had one last weekend where one of our members, longtime members, is in a bluegrass, kind of jazzy bluegrass band. And they came and played for us last weekend for our wine club, and it was so fun. People really enjoyed the music and the wine together and the whole outdoor area that we have there.
Do you ever have a day where you don't have music planned, but all of a sudden somebody pulls a guitar or harmonica out of their vehicle and volunteers to play? And has that ever created any interesting war stories?
Well, probably the latest one that we had happen to us is that we have a young woman working at the winery who we hired to pour wine. She's a really nice lady, and all of a sudden we find out that she's this amazing jazz singer. So we have it in the back of our heads that we're going to match up with a band and get her singing every Friday night there at the winery.
Oh, fantastic.
That's a plan.
Well, that's a good thing. I mean, I'm sure there are some folks, like if I started to play an instrument or sing, you probably escort me out. This is a question for either of you. Is there any music that doesn't go with wine, or is there any wine that doesn't go with music?
None that I know of. I think they all are a natural mix.
Okay.
It is. It's all part of a greater sensual experience. And there's so many parts of music that is just so much like wine. Like, for instance, when you make a Chardonnay, it goes through two different fermentations. One of them is a malolactic fermentation in the barrels, where it gets a completely different set of aromas and flavors than it does from the first fermentation. And then the winemaker comes in and tries to create texture there too. So there's all these different complex components that go into wine, just like it does for a piece of music.
Hmm.
It's just, I think that people who appreciate good wine really appreciate good music as well.
Yeah. You see that a lot, you know, just people relaxing with the wine and such. And it doesn't hurt that the setting in the Finger Lakes is, I think it's as beautiful as anywhere. Not that I've been everywhere on the planet, but again, going to Hobart College, I learned to really love that. So you see this sort of expanding, and do you see this happening in other parts of the country? And again, this is either for you, Lisa Hallgren, co-owner of Ravines Wine Cellars, or Kelly, you're with the Smith Opera House. What was the umbrella group, though? The Smith
Center for the Arts.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Have you noticed this as a trend outside of our region?
Well, I went to a seminar in Austin, Texas about 3 years ago, and area theater managers and owners get together and they discuss challenges and programming. And one of the things that was always brought up is it's really hard these days with virtual media and instantaneous videos and music that our audiences are becoming more difficult to attract. And a theater seats 1,400 and is a very large theater. So when we were looking at programming, we did this workshop, and one of them was is to program quality artists and musicians that may not fill 1,400, but still are worth hearing and bringing in and fulfilling what I said before, our mission. And that's where these outside venues came into play. And I think more, if you're a savvy theater owner, this is what you will do to keep and maintain music.
So you're giving out trade secrets here on WXXI and WEOS.
Yes,
I know. That's right. We have to remember WUSFM. First radio station I ever worked at Hobart and William Smith Colleges is part of our network here. So tell us a little bit about, again, Lisa or Kelly, you can answer this, what we might expect tomorrow night as we park our cars and walk towards the winery.
Well, before the concert, we like to have a fundraising wine tasting to raise money for the Finger Lakes Chamber Music Festival because, I mean, these guys are just amazing musicians. They come all the way from the city. They can definitely work in the city. They just love coming out to the Finger Lakes. So that already is just a beautiful experience with them. So beforehand, they can sit out in the line and have a view of the beautiful lake and enjoy some of our fine wines and then go up to the tasting room. And then during intermission, we also have another wine tasting. And then after the concert, there's a reception with desserts and more wine tasting with the musicians. So they get a chance to meet the musicians as well.
Okay, that's Lisa Hogren. She's co-owner of Ravine's Wine Cellars, and they have a concert tomorrow night with the Manhattan Chamber Orchestra. We also have Kelly Bradley, and she's the director of the Smith Opera House in Geneva. Kelly, yeah, I know. Things change names a lot. I mean, your visitors and convention center changed its name, and so that's good. Kelly, what role will you have in things tomorrow night? Are you going to be working? Are you going to be spectating, drinking wine? Are you
going to
be designated driver?
I'm hosting a gospel night with an area church
here
at the Smith Opera House.
Okay. Oh, fantastic.
So we're very excited about that because, you know, even I like when there's a lot of activities in the area. So like with what's happening at Ravines is exciting. And I think the more diverse the arts, the better the community.
Okay. Now Lisa, you're co-owner with, I assume, your husband, Morton?
Yes.
Okay. And is he the winemaker or are you the winemaker?
He is the winemaker. Yes.
Okay. And are you're the cook or the business person or?
Yes, pretty much everything else. I do everything else. And part of my job is events and food events. I used to do most of the cooking. Now we've grown a little bit more. We have two tasting rooms. So all of the events, it's impossible for one person to do it all. Luckily, we have a lot of great people, especially like Kelly, who can come in and bring these great musicians to us. And then we organize the food and we organize the wine and all and staff and try to make it a really nice event for people. I just want to mention also that we do have a website, ravineswine.com, and we have our calendar of events there. We also do a poetry series there in Geneva, in our barn in Geneva, called Wine and Words. And that schedule is up there on our blog, on our website. And we, quite luckily, one of our recent poets also announced that he was in a band also. He's a professor at Ithaca College, and that he sets his poetry to music, and he wants to come play in our barn. So that's something also that we're going to add to the event schedule for this coming year.
Is that going to include wine or something else?
Yes, always includes wine.
All right. Is there music that you can pair with beer?
I'm sure there is. We don't sell beer, but
sorry,
that's okay. Maybe like Kid Rock.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. Kelly, are you like a consultant as well? In addition to your job at Smith Opera House, you're consulting with people like Lisa and helping them come up with ideas for musicians and shows. Is that kind of the relationship?
Yes, I mean, I'm very fortunate that I have a wonderful board member named Jan Regan, and she assists me because we're a not-for-profit theater that in staffing can sometimes be issues, as you know, with these types of organizations. So she does some research, and she does a lot of the legwork, and then we figure out what's going to work. I mean, we look at four or five different artists, and you think you've got something lined up, and you don't. So it's a very long process. But we like to consult as much as possible, and then they consult, like, with Lisa. Then you get something out of it, too, so that, you know, that they can expand their awareness of their wines, and then it's just a win-win. I can't say enough. I mean, the last event we had there, Lisa, was great with the tango.
Yes. Yeah, it was a tango musician that's brought from Argentina, and then also some additional members of the Geneva Music Festival.
Yep.
And so they were coming in to play in our barn. They delivered a beautiful big grand piano. Me and my chef, Brad Holland, we had developed a menu of tapas made with all local produce, local meats and cheeses. And so we had a pre-concert tapas tasting, wine tasting, and tapas, and tango dancing, and then the concert started, and people were able to enjoy wine all through the concert, and it was a really fantastic evening.
Oh wow!
It
sold out.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Did people start tangoing during the concert? Was that allowed, or was it more sit in your seat now?
Some people in the back were tangoing. Yes, you can't help yourself, I think, even if you don't really know how.
They're either in the back or the front. That's where the ones who dance do that. Kelly, do you see bands marketing themselves using, you know, this wine connection? Like, you know, here's our band, and we, you know, we play with any kind of wine, and we go with any kind of wine. Or if you're having a, you know, a white wine tasting, our music is great for that. Or is that just way out there?
I don't think that's their mindset, that they're thinking of pairing with wine. I think they just figure out where their audience will be. The type of genre of music may lend itself better to wineries or breweries or something like that. That's a little bit more intimate. I think that's how they're viewing their own exposure.
Sort of along the lines of what you said about the smaller venues.
Yeah.
You know, there's great music that just doesn't cut it in a larger venue.
Right.
And this is an opportunity for those artists to get exposure, and for other businesses, the wineries, to get exposure, and for people just to enjoy the Finger Lakes that much more.
Absolutely.
That's fantastic.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. All right, we're going to sign off here in a second, but is there anything else that that maybe I've left out that either of you would like to mention before we step aside?
I would like to mention that what we also have on November 2nd, the Manhattan Chamber Ensemble or Orchestra is coming back to Ravines and playing a concert with a little bit of a kind of a Halloween theme, but it's all classical music, and that's in our barn in Geneva on November 2nd, and they can look on our website for that. And also, we have live music. We have a wonderful musician, Bill Feinstein, on Cuca Lake, who plays at our winery every Friday evening from 4:30 to 6:30, where people can just hang out on the lake, buy wines by the glass, and just enjoy the sunset every Friday.
Okay, fantastic. That is Lisa Hallgren. She's co-owner of Ravines Wine Cellars. Also on the phone here, Kelly Bradley, director of the Smith Opera House. Thank you for being here. Of course, we also had Richard Alden Clark, member of the Manhattan Chamber Orchestra. They'll be playing tomorrow night at the Wine Cellar. So thank you very much, and have a great weekend, and we're looking forward to it.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Okay, fantastic. All right, there is more Connections Arts Friday to come. We're going to step aside, and I'm Frank Sigelski, and you are listening to Connections Arts Friday on WXXI, WEOS, the WXXI mobile app, and WXXI.org. Pardon me. Thank you. Monday on the next Connections, it's our monthly science roundtable. We're looking at dwarf galaxies and some of the mysteries of deep space. Then, in our second hour, we explore the very latest on the Moreland Commission. What laws might have been broken? How does it impact the governor's race? That's Monday on Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Harley School, offering full-day preschool classes for 3 and 4-year-olds focused on school readiness and building a positive foundation for learning. The Harley School, joy in learning. Details at harleyschool.org.
This is WXXI AM Rochester, WXXI FM HD2 Rochester. Go public online with WXXI.org.
Do you have a car, truck, or other vehicle that you don't want anymore but still think it's worth something? You can donate it to WXXI Public Radio. We'll turn your gift into support for the news and public affairs programming you turn to each day. Learn more about WXXI's vehicle donation program at WXXI.org/car or call 1-877-308-2408.
And continuing on Connections Arts Friday, I'm Frank Sigelski, and for this half hour of Connections Arts Friday, we're going to talk about the Park Avenue Music Festival. What are we calling it these
please.
Days, Jeff? Jeff Springutz here. He's one of the promoters.
I am the producer of the event.
You are the producer of the event.
And it's much more than music, Frank. It's for 38 years. It's been called the Park Avenue Summer Arts Fest.
Yeah. Well, you know. I think I've been – I'm away that week.
Oh, I see.
Okay, so that's Jeff Springhunt. And Randy Minotaur?
Yes.
And you are also a promoter?
I'm the PR manager for the festival.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, well, right off the bat, I've made a cardinal mistake of misnaming the festival.
That's quite all right. This is why we're here, to help people understand what it's all about and what it's really called and when it takes place.
Okay, well, let's say that again. What's it really called?
It's the 38th Annual Park Avenue Summer Art Festival.
Okay. What did it used to be called again?
I think it's, to my knowledge, that's what it's always been called. I think different people call it different things based on their frame of reference. I think the more comfortable handle in town is the Park Ave Fest.
Right. Yeah, that's
everybody
it.
Everybody calls
that's
it the Park
it. Yeah.
Ave Fest, but we wouldn't want to misname it, call it the Park Ave Music Fest or the Park Ave... Party.
Well, wait a minute. I have been to this thing, and I do know there is an element of that kind of fun, and it's great.
Absolutely. And there are many people who entertain during the Park Ave Fest, and they have private parties at their homes and whatnot.
But you're not doing – I mean, you're not bringing in any musical art. I mean, that's all just street – buskers and
you
do
bring this is an excellent opportunity.
I'm
so glad we're here. There are 3 performance stages along the 1.25-mile stretch of Park Avenue that we close during the festival from Alexander Street to Culver Road.
Mm-hmm.
And on that 1.25-mile, as I say, there's 3 performance stages. One at Kirkhaven, which we call the Alexander Street stage,
mm-hmm.
one at Oxford Street, which we call the Oxford Street stage, and one by Somerton Green, which is by Somerton Street, and that's the Somerton Street stage, and that's down towards Culver Road.
Mm-hmm.
And there, between the 3 stages, there are some 33 performance groups
mm-hmm.
over the 2 days. The festival starts at 10 o'clock in the morning, goes till 6 o'clock on Saturday, goes till 5 o'clock on Sunday, and we also open at 10. And it's what we call art festival-friendly music. So it's entertaining. There's dancers, there's singers, there's small bands, but it's not to the degree that it interferes with conversations amongst the artists and their clients.
Right,
their
interesting.
Prospective clients.
Yeah, that's interesting. So maybe people can even conduct business.
Well, that's the idea. There's people come to the festival in vast majority to shop.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see people walking up and down the streets with all kinds of different things. We don't know what that prized item will be at this year that everyone has to have.
Right.
You know, some years it's that iron hook that goes in the ground that holds a plant or something, or
mm-hmm.
you know, you never know what catches the fancy of people, and people say, I've got to have that, let's go find it. We've got a great hat maker, Bounty Hunter Hats, Captain Mick, who's been with us for a number of years, and he makes all kinds of great hats, and there's jewelers, and there's glass artists and painters and everything else.
Yeah. 350 artists, right, Randy?
That's right. And they're in 14 categories. The jury that chooses these artists works very hard to pick only a certain number in each category. So you're really getting the cream of the crop. You know, they've gone through hundreds and hundreds of artists who apply to choose just the ones that they want.
That I did not know that. Did not even assume that. I figured, you know,
Oh, no, absolutely. Very
you vet these folks.
Vetted. It's what's called a juried art show.
Okay, right. Explain
and
that.
And I can tell you that we had some 86 jewelers apply this year, and I think there are 20 or 30 actually exhibiting.
What types of criteria?
Well, there are people who are professionals at the different various universities in town and come from art galleries and have experience in each of the field, be it woodworking or jewelry or pottery. And they look at slides that are submitted. Actually, it's not slides anymore. It's all digital.
It's on microfilm, right?
Right. And an artist who are new to the application process have to send in photographs of them making the pieces of work in their shop.
Gotcha.
Sometimes there's questions because it's a very sensitive issue to the artists who actually do make their own artwork and sell it, that people should get into the show in a, what we call a buy and sell.
They're just retailing.
Nature. They're retailing. They're buying it and selling it.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes they'll even ask them to send in receipts for their raw materials.
They go to those ends
to make sure they don't bat 100% all the time, but there's a real vetting process. We have asked people during the course of the show to leave when we saw them unpacking goods that were obviously made in China.
Yeah.
And we got applause from the artists who were surrounding them.
And we
gain a lot of respect. And that kind of attention to detail spreads through the artist community. These folks go from show to show all summer long. And when
they can pick and choose. They don't have to come here.
That's right. That's right.
That's
and
right.
They do good business. And the price range is, we also try to find a variety of modestly priced items so that younger folks or people on a tight budget can buy something for a gift for their best gal Sal or whatever, get some holiday gifts coming up, the unique items. And there are some people who tend to go for jewelry pieces I know that sell in the four-figure range, so there's something for everybody, and the quality is quite good. You have to take some time, walk the avenue. It's nice. People do tell me they enjoy it because they can walk down one side of the avenue and then back the other.
Right, right. I will say that in 1991, we lived at 340 Oxford Street.
Huh.
Back when, I don't know what it is now, but it was that little house, the black and white house at the corner of Oxford and Park that sold hot dogs and hamburgers.
Well, yeah, at one time it was the Omnivorium.
Okay, wasn't that? It was,
and it was Zeb's.
We lived there. Yeah. Zeb's.
It's a great little pub right now. One of my favorite spots, actually, in the off season, called the Half Pint.
Huh, okay.
And it's that same little, the fellow who owns it, tore it down and rebuilt it identical.
Exactly, like the stucco-y.
And it's a cute little pub inside. Yeah, it's a nice spot.
Well, again, and just a credit to Park Avenue, when we were there, there was no, like, the grocery store or whatever. There's so much more there.
Right.
And we were coming from Washington, D.C. at the time, where you can walk down any number of avenues and see that type of thing. And it's so great to see it in Rochester. And I have to believe that this festival has been a major catalyst for a lot of those businesses opening.
They tell us that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Merchants Association is a part of the planning process.
Mm-hmm.
There's eight neighborhood associations who are quite active.
Okay.
And the Merchants Association. And we meet throughout the year talking about what worked, what didn't work, the direction they'd like to see it go.
Okay.
And they earn funds from this to beautify the neighborhood. So they definitely participate.
It all comes back. That's Jeff Springhut. We also have Randy Minotaur there with the 38th Park Avenue Summer Arts Festival. If you'd like to talk to them, ask a question, comment, concern, the number is 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Okay, so an issue that came up, I think maybe started coming up maybe 10 years ago, was the rowdiness factor and the neighbors who, you know, they understood that, hey, everyone has a place in our society, but they wanted it toned down a bit. How did you work? I mean, you're still here. You're still doing it, and it doesn't look like you scaled it back at all. How did you get over that?
The festival itself actually has grown and continues to grow each year, but I think it's the cooperation and concerns between the neighborhood associations, the police department, the RPD, and the city government. And we work, as I say, quite closely in the off-season. And I say a number of years ago, the police took a slightly different, more, I don't want to say aggressive, but more proactive mm-hmm. approach to the parties that do crop up. Years ago, they would expand. They would start in somebody's lawn and then mm-hmm. go to the next person's lawn. And before you know it, half a block is kind of like enjoying the evening, you know?
Right, right.
And now they have very strict rules that they've gone out the past couple of days to. They know where some of the party areas have been in the past, and they'll talk to the tenants there or property owners and say, you know what, we want you to have a great festival. Mm-hmm. We want you to have some fun. A couple things you have to keep in mind. Number one, 11 o'clock, there's a noise ordinance. And at 11 o'clock, it's going to be quiet. And number two, you can have people on your property, but they have to stay on your property and on your lawn. So we're confining it to your area.
And so we're get off be, my lawn.
And mm-hmm. we're going to be real pleasant on Thursday and Friday.
And then
on the weekend, if we come by, we'll ask you once. Mm-hmm. And then other than that, we'll start issuing tickets and taking more enforcement action. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that policy has – the police have been very proactive, and the policy – that policy started about 3 years ago, and each year we gain on the number of complaint calls in terms of
– Fewer.
Fewer.
Yeah.
That's right.
We
gain on the improvement of lessening right. them. You know, we always have the positive
All right.
approach.
Okay. Exactly. And we're doing better at not getting these calls.
That's right. And last year it was almost eerie that it was so quiet in and around the avenue.
But it was still fun and people were still
people
doing their thing.
People were enjoying themselves by about 11:30. It was like, hey, this is pretty calm. Yeah. Wow. Okay, let's not say anything. You know, let's not...
Don't jinx it.
Don't jinx it or anything.
So now
but people have, and the police have been very consistent. And the neighborhood groups have been. And they say, you know what, have some fun. Be respectful of your neighbors. Have a good time. And there's going to be exceptions. We're not
yeah.
going to get
yeah.
there's going to be people new to the neighborhood, and we want people to have fun. It's
right.
not that we want to have a real parochial kind of a festival here. It's a Park
yeah,
Avenue
yeah,
festival.
Fun.
Have
yeah,
some
just,
fun.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of, well, how about food? That's because I'm really getting hungry right now.
Oh, good.
I was handed the official guide to the Park Avenue Summer Arts Fest, and I was just leafing through it, and I saw pictures of food. I think and
there is yeah. probably the best selection of food that we have ever had at the Park Avenue Festival. There's some 40 vendors. Plus the area merchants. Yep, on the
back ones that are there.
These are the people that are listed in the festival guide that you can get in this week's city newspaper, by the way, as
okay.
well as the festival. Right off the bat, Nick Tahoe's will be there. He's already set up with his big 50s-looking trailer there. He's by Meg Street, and he does a great job. There's Mediterranean food. One of my favorite new food trucks, and it's just one man's opinion, is the sushi food truck, the Fusion Sushi. And he does, I'll give him a plug because he's great, or he and his wife are great. They do they call it a trash plate, kind of a takeoff on Nick's thing, but it's all sushi related. It is absolutely phenomenal. You have to try that.
Does it have yellowtail in it?
It may. I don't know all the ingredients. And another one that is a traveling outfit that comes to us, and I think that we're one of the few places in town, the Cuban Latin Grill.
Mm.
And they're located close to the what's now, I think it's called the Park Berkeley Plaza, but it's, yep. we used to call it the Wilson Farms parking lot. Now it's the 7-Eleven parking lot. But they're near there, the Cuban Latin Grill, and their food, they feature chicken paella, arepas, and jerk chicken. But they've got some magic going in there, and they travel around the country. And I was talking to a woman, she was in her office yesterday. I said, what do you do in the wintertime? She said, I go back to Peru, where I'm from. So this is the real deal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you've got the food vendors as well, I assume.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah, we've got
you
your basics, you know. Yeah. We've got crab cakes from Baltimore. We've mm-hmm. got Sonny's Catering doing hots and burgers and sausage. And La Petite Poutine,
Randy? And Henry's Kettle Corn will be there for people who want to. The lines go around the block for the Kettle Corn. So lining up right at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning in there.
I just discovered that Kettle Corn recently. I thought, what is it made in a kettle? It's sweet.
It is.
It's made in the kettle.
Well,
it's
with
a
sugar.
Big copper kettle sugar.
And it's delicious.
And a little bit of salt, and it's addicting.
Yeah, it is.
It's extraordinary.
Like, stay away. Get your own bag.
And some old friends are coming back for the first time in a number of years. Artichoke French.
Oh, okay.
Colleen and her husband. These items, a lot of the vendors actually are family owned. And they work hard just preparing this food for our community, and they travel around from event to event, and it's real quality food. And you got all your basics. You got your hots and your burgers and your Italian sausage and chicken on a stick and everything else.
Corn dogs
and everything else. But there are there's fried dough, of course, Nancy's fried dough, and cinnamon roasted almonds and fresh squeezed lemonade and
I'll be eating lunch at 2:01 today, Jeff.
Perfect. Okay. I see you keep looking at that clock.
Just want to make sure that we don't go over.
That's good.
Jeff Springhut and Randy Minotaur are here. They're with the Park Avenue Summer Arts Fest 2014, the 38th annual.
Correct.
That's up there. There are not a lot of things that go back, in terms of these things that fade away if they're not successful. Yeah. So I think 38 years, you guys are, it's surviving.
And Frank, this is one of the most highly anticipated events that Rochester does. People plan their vacations around this. People make their wedding plans around, when is Park Avenue open? When is it not? All of these things bring people downtown to go to this festival.
We have such a short summer, and each weekend is a treasure. Folks know, if I'm going to go to a festival, I want to know what I'm getting into. And I know if I go down to Park Avenue, I know what I'm going to get.
Yep.
Right.
And it's been that way for 38 years. How about Fido? Should we leave Fido at home?
Please. We encourage all pets to be left at home. It gets hot. That blacktop is hot. It's not comfortable for dogs. It's not comfortable for other patrons of the festival to be bothered by dogs. There's two dogs in the same neighborhood. Leave them home. Don't leave them in the car.
Leave them in the car.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Leave them at home in the air conditioning a big bowl of water. That's where they want to be.
That's exactly right.
Because you got people pushing babies and strollers and then dogs, and it's just
It's not a good mix.
No, not a good mix
at
all.
Any other 2 days of the year is a good time to walk your pooch on Park Avenue and take a nice stroll and sit in one of the outdoor cafes. You can sit there with your pooch, and there's plenty of.
Then you can do exactly. Don't do it when it's the most crowded. Maybe one of the hottest days of the summer.
Yeah, not a good idea.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, and that's the thing, Frank. That something like 200,000 people attend this festival every year. That's a lot of people around your dog. So by all means, take into account that there'll be a lot of people there.
Now wait a minute, 200,000,
and this about 100,000 a day.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like not a record, but that is notable. I mean,
people who do
event planning would take note of the 100,000 people in a city this size.
That's correct. It tells you
Ralph Wilson Stadium and with 20,000 more people.
That's right.
Exactly.
So it's a tribute to the neighborhood. It's a tribute to the effort that goes into putting on the event, but all the coordination from the different organizations that work, and of course my staff and team who do a great job. And it brings a lot of people from out of town. We had some folks last night who drove in from Toronto, spending the weekend. Went to the George Eastman House yesterday, went to Party in the Park last night, went to the Dinosaur Barbecue, and then are coming to the Park Avenue Festival this weekend. They're doing it all, and they're going, this is great.
Yeah, and it's not expensive.
The festival itself is free. You go to Party in the Park for a $5 bill. You go to the Dinosaur Barbecue. It's reasonable.
Right.
It's a great city.
Great
and
people
so
watching.
Really, oh, it's the
That's
best.
That's the best part. I mean, because that way you don't have to move. You can just sit there and watch people go by.
I always say the Park Ave Fest is the best place to see and be seen.
Yeah, there you go. And we'll see you there. Randy, you've got the bulletin there. You've got something you want to share with our listeners?
I want to make sure you know where to park.
That was my question. Is there parking and is there a shuttle? What do you have going?
What has happened first is that the neighborhood gets together. They did it last night. They put up signs on all the side streets. Yes, you can park on this side. No, you can't park on that side.
They made it simple. So we don't have
simple,
to read those
clear.
Signs. It's a Monday through Wednesday.
Right. 6 o'clock.
Is it TM or AM?
Where am I? What day is it?
Right, exactly.
I know.
Yeah, so it's in, so that's number one. However, the side streets fill up very fast and very early. So we've arranged for other ways for you to get there. You can park at the Gleason Works lots on Elton Street and Anderson Street off of University.
Mm-hmm. And your Fabrics and Findings in that area?
That area, right. And at Monroe Square, which is at 250 Monroe Avenue, for the older people,
CMF.
It's where Sears used to be.
And
yes,
CMF used to be there.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
right. And we have shuttles from both of those places for it's a buck.
Oh, my goodness.
No, for heaven's sake, spend a dollar, yeah. take a shuttle. Yeah. It'll drop you off either at Park and Alexander or Park and Culver, and you'll have the whole festival
there.
To walk
right.
from
Right, and
there.
That way you can walk the length of it and then back Come and back. Then right. go back to your car.
And actually, we added 2 years ago, we added a stop on East and Oxford.
Ah, okay.
So halfway through. So if you don't want to walk the distance, you can walk down from Park Avenue down Oxford Street to East Avenue. Both shuttles stop there and take you back to either.
The shuttles are not going to be going down Park Avenue. No cars are going to be going down
right.
Park Avenue.
No.
Obviously,
that's
they have to go on East or
parking
University.
Parking stops, traffic, vehicular traffic stops on Park Avenue at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
And
so
it'll open back up about an hour, hour and a half after the festival closes.
11 p.m.? Is that when it closes?
Oh, no. It closes at 6 o'clock on Saturday and 5 o'clock on Sunday.
Okay. 11 p.m. is when we have to turn the music down.
That's correct.
Right.
There you
That's
go.
Right.
Okay. Good. There
just
you go.
Making
That's,
note of this.
You got these hours.
All right. Well, you know, I got the name of the festival correct now. So we got time for maybe one call if someone has a quickie at 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. What else would people want to know? I mean, I love that about the parking. You have to get that out there. And the thing about the dogs, if you're bringing a baby, make sure you got sunscreen. What else? You know, is there anything else?
I always suggest either coming early or later in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime's a good time to come. It's a rain or shine event. It usually rains for a few minutes and then passes through. And people jump into some artist's booth and spend a few dollars, and they jump out, and the sun is clear, and they made a good purchase.
Mm-hmm.
Bring your shopping eyes, because it's a good place to buy a gift for the upcoming holiday season or special
mm-hmm.
event.
Do you roll in any ATMs?
Oh, yeah. There's plenty of ATMs throughout the event.
Okay.
And we sell our T-shirts and merchandise tents at Berkeley Street and at Oxford Street, and there's ATMs nearby there.
As
also,
well.
Yep.
Okay. And first aid?
First aid is wherever you need it.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, we're there everywhere.
First aid
There's,
security, you're going around. You got
yeah,
the
right.
you got the
There's plenty
the
of police
walkie-talkies and,
yeah.
and probably some, you know, plain clothes, I would imagine.
There's all kinds of security at the event.
That's all we need to know.
Yeah.
Well, there must be, because you keep increasing the number of calls that you're not getting.
That's right.
That's exactly it.
Something like that. Anyway, sure.
Oh, my.
It's a lot of fun. Come out, relax, enjoy yourself, visit with some friends you haven't seen in a while. You always bump into people and that you maybe haven't seen in a while. And
you doing any streaming, web streaming of, you know, shots down Park Avenue?
There have been some private folks doing that over the years. The festival has not gotten into that yet.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll be there. WXXI will
Good.
Be there,
mm-hmm.
so we'll be reporting on that and maybe
Terrific.
Get some sound. So look for our mic flags, and you know, we can do that. But yeah, that would be interesting because do I want to go down? I wonder if it's crowded, and you could just go to your computer, just show
yeah,
up. You'll figure out if it's crowded
up,
when you get there.
There are spots. Okay. There's a real ebb and flow to it all. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So again, if you want to, we have a caller there, John. No callers. We don't have enough time here for that. From the PR perspective, have you two worked together all these years, or are
no,
you relatively?
I joined Jeff's group this year for the Lilac Festival, so we've worked together all summer. But we know each other from way back when I was the editor of Free Time Magazine in the 80s. So.
That, wow. Okay. So we all go back, not just
yes.
me.
Yes. So we sure do.
All right. So you also promote the Lilac Festival?
We produce the Lilac Festival.
Produce.
Well, we promote it as well, but we get one step beyond promoting it.
Right.
And we have Burke Communications does a lot of our marketing for that. Andrea Burke, who actually brought Randy on this year.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
Did a fine job with our human flower and setting mm-hmm. the Guinness World Record
yeah,
for that.
Yeah, that. Awesome.
That was a lot of fun. And then we also produced the Big Rib Barbecue and Blues Festival in July in Highland Park.
Okay. So you're busy from the time the lilacs – well, you're busy year-round.
We kind of are, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine that – I mean, just thinking about what goes into planning a family picnic with 30 people.
Right.
Much easier for me. Although sometimes I wonder.
Well, I mean, family politics, right. you don't have that so much maybe with the festival, the public one. Where do you get ideas? I mean, where do you get ideas to for new things that you can do to spruce up the festival?
We travel. We like to go to different events around the world.
Yeah, do you? That's what I'm wondering. Do you? Is that part of your work, is to go and see?
It's an important part of my job, traveling around the world, going to festivals and special events. And it sounds funny. We're smiling, but it's true.
No, it's homework.
Some people would rather go and sit on a beach someplace, but I want to go see that special event and see how they're doing it and we'll get an idea.
Uh-huh. Do you do some cross-marketing between, let's say, the Lilac Festival and this festival?
We do.
Remember to go to the Park Avenue Festival in 2 months.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Signage at the Lilac Festival and stuff
at
like
our website at rochesterevents.com,
okay, rochesterevents.com,
you'll see information about all three festivals all year round.
Okay.
Good point, Randy.
Yeah. Now, that human flower that got into the Guinness Book of World Records, mm-hmm. did that get a lot of play nationally, internationally?
It did. It got play in the Far East. People picked up on it. We saw pictures in
Pakistan.
Several different Pakistan, different languages with that photograph that we took. And we had a helicopter fly over. And It got a lot of play, and I think it's going to continue to get a lot of play.
Well, that was a great idea. I mean, that's a marketing idea.
It's a great marketing idea, and I have to give credit to Andrea Burke at Burke Communications for doing it because she came up. We all ran with it once we heard about it and kind of massaged it a little bit. But, it was a lot of fun. It was different for us. That was the first time we'd ever made a human flower.
Yeah, I've yet to do that. Were you in the flower, you two?
I was
no,
not.
We were up on the stage watching the flower, but there was a moment when everybody put on their ponchos. It was just gorgeous.
Oh, that's awesome.
Beautiful thing.
We're looking forward to the 38th Park Avenue Summer Arts Festival. Jeff Springhut, Randy Minotaur, thank you for being our guest on Connections.
Our pleasure.
Arts
thank
Friday.
You, Frank.
All right, we'll
Thanks.
See you there. All right, on behalf of John Andrus, our technical director, I am Frank Sigelski, and you have been listening to Connections Arts Friday on WXXI, WEOS, the WXXI mobile app, and WXXI.org.